Hello and welcome to the Unity Presbyterian Church podcast. This week in worship, Pastor David takes a look at the story of Cain and Abel and how the choices we make affect our lives. Let's listen.
I mean, I belong to a board game family, and one of our favorites was Monopoly. We could play for hours on a rainy Saturday day in Seattle. It would be so much fun. But I was talking with a friend once, and he said, we don't play Monopoly anymore. I said, why? He said, every game ended in yelling and tears, and one almost ended in fistfights. So we don't play Monopoly anymore. In fact, I thought he would play this game. I came across it in Barnes & Noble. Couldn't really believe that it was an actual game. But if you're a non-board game family, you might like this one a little bit more. Aggravation. I mean, some family systems go, nope, we're not playing that. That is just aggravating. No matter what game it is, that's what it's going to make me feel. But here's what I want you to realize. We all come from different family systems, don't we? And for the most part, you have probably been positively influenced by your family system. You are who you are today in part because of how you were raised. And so if you were raised loving board games, you probably introduced them to your family. And yet, all of us had things that we had to unlearn from our childhood as well. When we became adults and said, you know, I don't think that was a healthy habit or pattern that I learned. I need to now choose my own path. Yes, all of us have been influenced in positive and negative ways from the family systems that we were raised in. Well, I want you to keep those in mind today, some of the ways that specifically you were influenced, because as you can see, we are still in our creation series called Let There Be. And last week, we studied how Adam and Eve disobeyed God for the very first time. And the consequences of that was a fracture in the relationship between them and God and between them and one another. But what you'll see today is that that choice to disobey God for the first time also fractured their entire family system. Yes, we're studying Cain and Abel today. We are studying their children, their sons, and you will see ways that really the sins of the parents trickled down into their relationship as brothers as well. And so why don't you just think about some of the ways that you were impacted by the family you grew up in to see if that helps you relate to this story of Cain and Abel. I mean, perhaps you've been seeking your parents' approval for longer than you can remember. Or maybe you have struggled through a long history of competition with your sibling. And even to this day, you compare yourself, how am I doing in my life, compared to how they're doing in their lives. We all have baggage from our upbringing. And understanding that and bringing that out into the open will help us understand stories like these in the Bible. And so this begins in chapter 4, verse 1 of Genesis. This is the story of Cain and Abel. It says this, Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. And she said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. And later she gave birth to his brother, Abel. Now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. Okay, so we arrive right here in the beginning of Genesis chapter 4 at a very fascinating question. Why does God accept the offering of Abel while God does not look with favor on the offering of Cain? And the Bible gives us no inclination. Genesis doesn't share at all why God looked on favor of the younger son, Abel, and not on the older son, Cain, and their offerings. And so in the absence of facts, there have been some wild speculation on the reason why God favored one over the other. In fact, in my research this week, I came upon a couple that I found particularly fascinating. In fact, one suggested that Cain, with his offering, brought fruit, right? And Abel brought meat in his offering, and so, well, God must prefer meat over fruit, right? That's the interpretation. I read that going, I don't think so. I think you're reading way too much into the text there. Or another suggestion said that Abel brought some of the firstborn of his flock, so the best of the best, while Cain just simply brought some of his crops, meaning not the best, and so Abel was favored. I don't know. I don't really see that in what we just read this morning. When you come to a challenging part of the Bible, where you are questioning how to interpret it, the first and best thing you can do is ask, does the rest of the Bible share anything about the story I'm reading? Or another way to put that is, can you use Scripture to interpret Scripture? Rather than first going outside of the Bible to another source, no, say, does the Bible have anything to say about what I'm reading this morning? And lucky for us, the Bible does have more to say about this story. In fact, in the New Testament, one of Jesus' disciples, John, writes about Cain and Abel in the letter of 1 John, and it shares with us a pretty sizable clue about why God favored Abel's offering and not Cain's. And so let's read this short section from the letter of 1 John chapter 3. John says, "For this is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous." This seems to imply that even before Cain murdered Abel, and we'll get to that in a second in the story, but even before that, Cain was somehow involved in evil pursuits. And if Cain was already involved in evil activities, then there's a high likelihood that his heart was not in the right place when he was offering a sacrifice to God. I mean, if he is already involved in things that God would not look on favor with, then there's a good chance that he was just going through the motions when he was offering up that sacrifice to God. And so Cain, in fact, we could say this about sacrifices and offerings. We'll get this on the screen. But when you give to God, God cares more about the state of your heart than the content of your offering. It doesn't much matter what Cain and Abel brought, the content of their offering. What matters is the state of their heart when they were giving that over to God. So God prefers Abel's offering over Cain. And Cain does not respond well to that. The text goes on. It says, "So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. And the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you may rule over it.'" So Cain is angry at God. And God, in his time of anger, comes to him. And God offers Cain two choices. The first choice, he says, is, "Cain, if you do what is right, you can be like your brother. Your offering can be accepted just like Abel's if you choose to do what is right." God says, "But if you don't, if you choose intentionally to do what you know is wrong," God says, "sin is crouching at your door and it desires to have you." Now that's interesting language, isn't it? I mean, how often does Christianity talk about sin as simply breaking the rules? Like, oh, I know I shouldn't have done that. I was sinning in that moment. But here, in the fourth chapter of Genesis, the author talks about sin in a fairly different way. The author talks about sin as a destructive force that literally desires to have control of Cain. I mean, it's almost as if God is looking at Cain and says, "I can see into your heart, Cain, and I know how angry you are. I know how angry you are at your brother. And it's like God is saying, I need you to control your anger, or your anger will destroy you. God recognizes that there's this destructive force inside of Cain's heart right now that is not going to lead him into a life-giving place. You know, we still use this language today, don't we? And we tell people, control your temper, as if your temper is some external force that you must wrestle with. Or we tell people, you need to tame your worst instincts. Yeah, we still use this language today. Well, the Bible, so many years ago, says sin is crouching at your door, and it desires to have you. But there is good news in this. Cain is not powerless or helpless in the face of this destructive force. No, instead, God says, you may rule over it. Now, in Hebrew, the phrase, you may rule, is timshel. We'll get that on the screen so you can see that. Timshel. Will you just keep that word in your mind? It's going to be important just a little bit later on in the sermon. But timshel, this idea that you may rule. It's like God is saying, sin wants to rule you, but you may rule it. It's not a foregone conclusion that Cain's anger and envy are going to take over his life. It's not like Cain can just shake his fist at heaven saying, God, you made me like this. You gave my heart a bent towards sin, so it's your fault that I want to act on it right now. No, God says it wants to have you, desires to have you, but you may rule over it. What God is saying to Cain is that, Cain, you have a choice right now. In high school, I went through a John Steinbeck phase. I don't know if anyone else did or if I'm the only one there, but one of my favorite books by him was East of Eden. And what I really enjoyed about this book is it is a modern retelling of the Cain and Abel story. And so there's two brothers in this book, Cal and Aaron. And Cal believes that his father favors Aaron. And so because of that, Cal is just horrible to his brother and really is pushing him away. He's the Cain in this sort of story. And he pushes Aaron away to the point that Aaron flees and joins the army. This is set during World War I, and Aaron, running away from his brother, joins the army and is killed in battle. Cal, the Cain figure, is just wrecked with guilt. And upon hearing this news that Aaron is killed, the father has a severe stroke and is on his deathbed. And so the book ends with Cal going to his father's deathbed to beg for forgiveness, to say, Father, you need to release me from this. I'm wrecked with guilt over what I've done to my brother, and I don't want this curse of Cain and Abel to go on to the next generation, so you need to forgive me. You need to release me from this. And here's how the book ends. Spoiler alert, if you're going to read this week. It says, the father looked up with sick weariness. His lips parted and failed and tried again. And then his lungs filled, and he expelled the air, and his lips combed the rushing sigh. And his whispered word seemed to hang in the air. Timshel. And then his eyes closed, and he slept. And that is the end of the book. And I was so frustrated as a high school student, because I had no idea what that word meant. I said, Timshel? What is that? I just spent 600 pages reading this story, and that's your conclusion? That's the climax? Some word I've never heard before? I can't tell you how frustrated I was getting to the end of that book. But I wish I knew then what I know now, that Timshel is a Hebrew word. It's a Hebrew word which means you may rule. Do you see what the father with his last word is telling this Cain figure? He's telling him, Cal, you have a choice. You have a choice of where you go from here. You have a choice of ruling your worst instincts and desires, the things that have gotten you to this point today. You have a choice of what your life looks like moving forward. Tim Shell. You know, today, we might call that concept of ruling over oneself, we might call it self-control. But self-control, it's really, this biblical concept of Tim Shell, it's deeper than just, I'm not going to eat that piece of cake even though my mouth is watering. You know, it's a little bit deeper than that. In fact, when we think of self-control, you probably think of a picture like this, where you go, which dog are you? Are you the dog on the left that has really great self-control and is not going to eat one of those treats? Or are you like the dog on the right? And we've probably all had a dog like that before, where you walk in and go, oh, what have you done? Go to the yard. No, you have destroyed my fabric. We think of self-control like that, of making the right choices in life and doing things that, you know, lead into the type of people we want to be. But really, it's a little bit deeper. And I would encourage you to think of this as the ability to consistently make the choice that will bring life. That's self-control. That's Tim Shell. That's the ability to rule oneself, is the consistent ability to make the choice that will lead to life in your circumstance. And so in your family systems, in your marriages, in your parenting, be able to make the choice that you know is going to lead to life in that relationship. Or in your conversations, be able to choose the words that you know will lead to life. And so it's not so much avoiding things that you know are not good for you, but it's intentionally choosing the things that you know are going to lead you to the life abundant that God provides. Well, God tells Cain, learn how to rule over your anger and your envy before it rules over you. Cain, unfortunately, doesn't heed that warning. So, the next verse says, now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they're in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? I don't know, he replied. Am I my brother's keeper? The Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. See, Cain has not learned to control, to rule over his anger, and so he has been ruled by it. And it leads to him murdering his brother Abel. And so what is God to do with Cain? I mean, this is the first murder recorded in the Bible. And so what God does with Cain is going to tell us a lot about God's sense of justice in the world. And so what is God to do with Cain? Is God going to kill Cain? An eye for an eye, right? Just like Cain killed Abel? No. No, instead, God says this. Well, now you are under a curse and are driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. And so when you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. God does not take Cain's life. God does not want the cycle of violence to continue. No, there has been enough bloodshed today. But there is a punishment, and it's a rather harsh one. Cain is no longer going to be living in community. Cain has proven himself a danger to being in community, and so God expels him from that community and says, you are going to be a restless wanderer. You're going to live alone. You'll be nomadic. You will not be around the community that you once held. Cain says this in response. Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. I mean, how ironic is it that Cain kills his brother Abel and then is so afraid that he himself will be killed? But God says, the Lord said to him, not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. And then the Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him would kill him. And so Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. I see both guilt and grace in God's response to Cain. I mean, I see consequence, The consequence that God is driving Cain out, saying you can no longer be around community because you've taken the life of someone else. And so he drives him out of community and says, you will be a restless wanderer. Yes, there is consequence to Cain's guilt. But there's also grace, isn't there? The grace in that God does not demand Cain's life. God does not institute a system where it is a life for a life. But instead, God places a mark on Cain and says, I will offer my protection to you. Now go, wander, live somewhere else, but you will not suffer the same fate that you made your brother suffer. And here's the really important part. God has not given up on Cain. No, Cain can make the choice from this day forward on what type of person he is going to be. This is really the concept of Tishmah. Cain now has the option to learn how to rule himself. And it's like God is telling him, the choice is yours now. I'm letting you remain with your life. You're going to live out there by yourself, but you have now the opportunity to conquer those demons that have raged in you and led you to this point in your life. Cain does not have a predetermined fate. No, God says it is now your choice. It is your choice of what your life looks like from this day forward. Tishmah. This reminds us of the incredible gift that God has given us, and it's the ability to choose. I mean, we are not like the rest of the animal kingdom where we act on instinct alone. No, we have the ability to choose. To choose life or death in the situations that we find ourselves in. And some of you have been a part of broken family systems that are very similar to the ones in this book, East of Eden, or very similar to the ones we see in Genesis chapter 4 between Cain and Abel. Some of you still compete with your siblings, viewing them more as competition than as friends. But what this story teaches us is that you are on your own path with God. It is not between you and your brother, but it's a relationship between you and God. And we all have the ability to choose from this day forward what we want our life to look like. Tishmah.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.